Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Was this really him just kind of spinning out of control? I mean, he knew a lot of the financial stuff was about to come to light. He knew things were going to shit with the boating case, and Buster was likely going to face jail time and serious other repercussions for his actions there. I mean, we look at this and Creighton Waters, the prosecuting attorney, he called it family annihilation, a family annihilator, where someone can't deal basically with the onslaught of shame that is about to come your way from the people that you care about most because of your own actions. And rather than deal with those emotions, deal with the shame, deal with the repercussions, your wife may be leaving you, your kids may be saying, screw you, dad, whatever. The way to eliminate feeling that shame would be to eliminate those people. Then suddenly people have sympathy for you. Then you get the empathy. You get everybody, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Your family was killed. This is horrible. Oh my gosh. As opposed to what the other next step would have been had reality just played itself out with anybody being murdered, which would have been Alec Murdaugh facing the wrath for all of his financial crimes and his son facing that. And really just a huge, you know, blight of shame on the family name of Alec Murdaugh and the Murdaugh legacy, which he was, you know, kind of not the black sheep, but he was kind of one of the weakest links of one of the individuals that seemed to have the propensity to screw up the name with his own stupidity and actions.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I don't know. I saw an interesting comment I forget who said it, but something about the financial crimes is what he's most likely guilty of. But I think you're right, Tony. This guy knew something else was coming down. He may not have pulled the trigger, but he was aware. This is a man who had his finger on the pulse of everything in this town. But tell me he didn't know this.
But then it goes back to the question, though, like Todd says, though, where he's like trying to figure out the story. If you already have your story, you'd think he would have it. Or is this a plan to play stupid? And I have no idea who. Maybe that was part of the drugged up plan in his mind of like, oh, that'll be perfect. They'll buy that, and the drugs say, yeah, of course, that'll be great. It's like when you're drinking or something, like, this is a great idea. And the next year, you're like, what the fuck was that?
And that's just it. If he was on the drugs, maybe he planned this when he was a little more coherent, but then the drugs kick in and he's like, okay, I think I remember this. I don't know. I got to work on this. You know, did I remember that? Did that happen? What happened? He doesn't know what the hell's going on.
That's why it makes me wonder. I mean, and that's what makes it all just more elusive of what did he know? When did he know it? Obviously that if it weren't for the video, the kennel video, which is the video that places him there pretty much at the time of the murders, I don't think they would have a conviction on him. But the kennel video, it puts him there. It does. But he could easily have left. He could have easily gotten that golf cart and got the hell out of there. Right after that, there's a lot of question, I think, on whether he actually killed the family. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, because this doesn't read to me as a man who's being completely forthcoming. I it's hard to digest somebody being this calm in the face of what he just witnessed. And look, he just may have a completely different threshold of how he emotes after seeing very traumatic things. He may just be completely numb to it. He clearly doesn't have a lot of empathy to begin with, judging right by the way he was able to act in the face of those financial crimes. So emotion and empathy is not something that just comes and goes. It's not like, well, I'll have empathy over here, but I won't have it over there. It's either there or it's not. And if you're going to have it, and you'll see this a lot of times in narcissistic families, if there's empathy for anyone, it's going to be for the family members themselves. But it's more so, how is that family member going to benefit me, that I'll have empathy, which is really just more so wanting to control that family member to benefit themselves. But it will look more like empathy. This doesn't look, this just looks insane. It looks cold, callous. Why would you, what, at the end of the day, what was the purpose of this other than to preserve, if he got away with it, his dignity in his mind? Was that the end goal here? Is just his own, his dignity, and he would get all this attention and all of this empathy for your family was just murdered and you're already going through that? Was that the goal at the end of the day? Because that's the only thing that makes a lot of sense. So
he strikes me as the kind of guy who is going to want to control the narrative right out of the gate.
Yes, yes.
And yeah, I know somebody very much like that. Yeah. Like, I don't care what the story is. Here's what I want people to hear about. Yeah. And it's like, oh, fuck that. You're going to hear the truth, people.
Well, that's how narcissists function. That's how they work.
So my thing is that in recent times, right before this happened, all the money situations were coming out. The family stuff was all coming out. I wonder if he started to question how much control he had over the narrative and started freaking out. I mean, you look at Donna Adelson, up until the point where the judge said guilty, she actually thought she still had control.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Over that, over the jury, the narrative, and the narrative.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if he started seeing things crumble away and now he was trying to work harder to try and cover up what was kind of coming out here. He just seems like he's thinking.
And working harder meant killing his family, because that put him in control.
Interesting.
I mean, it would. It would put him in control of that narrative. I mean, it would mean attempt to put him in control of that narrative. Clearly, it didn't work out, but it did allow, I mean, he didn't get arrested right away. I mean, it took a bit of time to arrest Alec Murdaugh. It wasn't, right after they're sitting in this cruiser, he's going to jail. He's free for quite a while after this. And the investigation, frankly, sucked. I mean, it was not very, very detailed. There was no immediate sealing of the scene. And we can see this other police video where they pull up and Alec Murdaugh's wandering around the property. And then you have all these first responders showing up. Obviously they're dead, but then you have all these other officers, these sled officers, wandering around, contaminating the scene. There's foot traffic everywhere. So good luck trying to find any sort of footprints.
Yeah.
Of anyone else. There's no protective gear going on early on. They're not printing things. I mean, there was just so many things that didn't make sense. And again, this is, and I feel like in this case, in that element of this case, incompetency can very often masquerade as conspiracy. Where are you doing this to protect him? Are you doing this? No, I mean, I think it might be more that these officers didn't have a lot of reps and things like this. And they knew Alec Murdaugh, and he was, you know, this figure in town and this family, and he couldn't have possibly done it. So we're not even going to think that right away. We're just here to take care of this. But at the end of the day, if you want to figure out who the hell did this, if you're not immediately assuming it's Alec Murdaugh, you'd want to preserve that scene. But again, if you don't have reps in that and you don't realize the repercussions to which you are having on that crime scene until after, you should know. But if you weren't trained that way and you haven't experienced it, you know, the reps, you're going to go along with the rest of the group. And that, I think, is a lot of what took place on the Moselle property that night.
I'm sad that it was handled so poorly in the investigation part. It's sad that there may be jury tampering and all that kind of stuff, because you would think that. And again, that's where my question comes up about whether or not he really did it. That he probably was involved, but did he pull the trigger? You wish it was a cleaner story. You wish it made sense from start to end, but it just doesn't.
And so many cases don't. Sometimes simple is the answer, and sometimes simple is not at all the answer. And this is not a simple, I don't think. Why two guns? Why? I mean, there's a lot of it just does not add up. Let's watch a little bit more of the police interrogation here. And then after that, we're going to go. Eric Faddis is going to be joining us. I'm going to go sneeze and blow my nose because my allergies are horrible. Eric Faddis is going to be joining us. We're going to take up Donna Adelson, and we're going to talk about the appeal. We're going to talk about the future for Wendy. That's coming up. But let's watch a little bit more of this before we get into that.
Actually, no.
Okay.
It was some people that he knew distantly, but more times than not, when I learned about it, it was somebody that he didn't know.
Okay.
It's like, for example, he went out in Charleston a couple months ago, came back, and you know, he got a black eye. And, you know, he can't defend himself right now because he has these charges. So, you know, he would, Paul's a real tough man's man. Mm-hmm. You know, he would just...
He would defend himself, but he hadn't done...
That's right, but...
How was he handling that case? Letting over
everybody?
As far as what?
How was he handling it?
I've never been prouder of him than the way he has handled the pressures and the adversity in that situation. I think I've told Danny that before. Mm-hmm. I mean, Paul is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful kid. He can do almost anything. He gets along with almost anybody.
Do y'all store any weapons out here?
We don't store them, but they're, you know, they're frequently out here. Mm-hmm. I need to find out if there were any out here because I know there was a shotgun. There was a 12-gauge shotgun out here. I'll have to find out exactly when that was. I think it got put up, but I'm not positive.
What did that shotgun look like?
It was a camouflage. I want to say it was a Benelli or maybe a Beretta. I can't remember which brand it is. But I don't think it was out here.
Okay.
Recently. But I'm not positive.
And the shotgun that you had when deputies pulled up, where did that come from?
I went to the house and I got a gun. Probably overreacting, but...
And was that when you pulled up and saw them?
And no, I mean, I came out and... I mean, I called 911 first.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to them for a little while, and then I told her.
Told her?
That I was going to go to the house.
Okay.
And that I would let authorities know when they got here that I had a gun.
Okay. Do you happen to have a list of all your guns?
I can make one. I don't have one, yeah. But I can make one.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, you know, so we could compare if that shotgun was out here and now it's missing.
Absolutely.
Try to figure that out.
I know, absolutely.
And I know living out here in the country, you probably have more than one or two.
We do. We probably have 20, 25 guns,
yeah. Shotguns, rifles, pistols. Any rifles?
Yes, sir.
And what kind of rifles?
All kinds.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you name it, across the board, we have them.
Okay.
And I mean, they're all of them we have are, you know, in a hunting room in our house.
What was their schedule today? When did they get?
My son works for my brother, and he was coming home to deal with the sunflowers. He got here pretty early because he and I rode around looking at everything for a good little while, probably 45 minutes to an hour. Maggie had things she did in Charleston, and she had a doctor's appointment in Charleston. And she got back here. It was fairly late.
Was it dark yet when Paul got home?
No, Paul got home early.
Early, okay. So before dinner time?
Before? Oh, yes, ma'am.
Lunchtime? Or?
No, ma'am.
No. What brother, brother does Paul work for?
John Marvin.
And what does Paul do for him?
Everything.
That's cool. Handyman?
Yes, sir.
Was it unusual for Maggie to feed the dogs this time of night or check on them?
Oh, no. I mean, she played with those dogs all the time. And it's especially common for her to, you know, she's been gone for a while to come and let especially two of them out to run.
Okay, so she pretty regularly comes out here in the evenings?
Very regularly.
Okay.
She comes out here a lot.
You have any cameras on your property?
I have deer cameras, but none, you know, around up here.
Where are they at?
On different deer stands.
Okay, so deep in the woods?
Well, not necessarily deep in the woods. Some of them are in fields and...
Okay.
But I don't, there's none that, you know, are near here.
Okay.
What doctor appointment? What doctor did Maggie see today?
I forget the guy's name. Maggie's been having trouble with her. She's been having trouble with her stomach and her tooth. I'm not positive. It was sort of a routine visit, and I can't remember. She told me the name of him, and I can't. I want to say Gordine.
Okay.
It is who I think she saw.
So was she back home around supper time? Or 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock?
I don't think she got back quite that early. I think she got back a little bit later than that.
Okay. And what did you do today? Were you at the office or?
Nope, I was home. I came home. Paul and I messed around. I was up at the house, laid down, took a nap on the couch, probably, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes. I got up. I called Maggie. Didn't get an answer. And I left to go to my mom's. She had said she might ride with me, but she normally doesn't when I go over there. And I think I texted her. And she's very good about answering the phone, so that was odd, or calling me back. So that was odd, but it wasn't that big a deal.
What time was that?
What time was what?
That you sent her a text message.
I texted her at 9:08, going to check on M, be right back. And then I texted her at 9:47. That must be when I started to come back. I think I called her before that. But let me make sure.
That's some of the police interrogation of Alec Murdaugh right as moments after the murder of his wife and son.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.